I'm your father.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Dadawan podcast. I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Ribello.
And we are here with a very special episode that we've been looking forward to. And it's really kind of one of the reasons, at least, that we started this podcast all together. The Force Awakens has been released. We saw it last night, Thursday night, on its opening. And we are here with our full review. And just a warning, there will be spoilers. There will be lots of spoilers. So anybody who has not yet seen the film should not listen to this podcast until you do.
Right.
But then when you do see it, definitely come back, because I have a feeling we're going to have lots of interesting takes on certain things in this movie. So you've definitely come to the right place for a nice discussion on The Force Awakens. So you've been warned. There will be spoilers. So again, this is the last time we're warning you. And now that that's out of the way, Let's dive into this review, because it's out. I mean, we've been waiting for this for a long time.
Yes, we have.
We talk a lot about this. You know, we've done a lot of speculating. It's funny, because when we started our other podcast, which is the Hey You Geeks podcast, our first episode talked about Star Wars, because we obviously love Star Wars. And that was the time when Disney just purchased Star Wars, and we heard they were going to be doing new movies. So, you know, We've been speculating for a few years now on this and that podcast. So it's exciting to actually be here. And now we can actually take some of our speculation and see what we were right about. Let's just dive in.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where to begin. There's so much to talk about. Let's start with our general overview review. Mm-hmm. Did you like it?
Oh yeah, I mean it's hard not to like it. It's so funny that, you know, I've been listening to everybody else's reviews the last couple of days, and it's like everybody's, you know, coming up with the same stuff that they don't like about it, but everybody loves it. So it feels like everybody feels compelled to say, you know, what they don't like about it. But I think most of the stuff that I've heard so far that people don't like is a stretch. I mean what more could you really ask for? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, making this any better than it is. I mean, you know, yeah, okay. Oh, they borrow a lot from A New Hope. All right, fine. But what did you want? I mean, what did people want? I don't understand, you know, what more people could have wanted than what you get in this film. I mean, I just think it delivers, and 180 degree change from the prequels. I mean, you couldn't get farther away from the prequels than this film. I just loved it. And what do you think, Tony, before I get into specifics? I don't want to get too specific here.
Well,
before we get your side.
I loved it as well. I really do. Yeah. The only concerns that I have about it are what you just said. You know, It did take a little bit from New Hope.
It took a lot. It took a lot.
I mean, there's a lot of different things which we can point to a little later in the show, but you know, in particular, the whole kind of rehashing of the Death Star scenario,
right?
And that whole scene with attacking the Starkiller base was.
You know what I love about that scene is they're like, "What do we do?" And Han Solo's like, "Well, we just find the hole to shoot at."
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it had lots of great humor around some of the callbacks.
Yeah,
but you know what? None of the callbacks took me out of the movie at any point.
No.
At any point. And I'll tell you why. Normally, something like that would have maybe bothered me a little more, if not for the fact that the characters in this movie were instant classics. And I'm telling you, and I'm not even kidding here. Some of the characters in this movie I like more than some of the classic original characters that I've loved for years. I mean, I instantly, especially Finn, Rey, and Poe Dameron, and even Kylo Ren. I mean, amazing characters, incredibly acted by all sides. And this is where, for me, it's so much better than the prequels, because J.J. Abrams is amazing at casting, and he look what he did with Star Trek, and he hit a home run here, because this cast is phenomenal. I mean, it's the best thing this movie has going for it, hands down.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the scene with Han and Kylo Ren on the bridge, when Kylo is, you know, confronting himself, really, and trying to find his strength, that one scene encompassed everything the prequel should have been and was not. Because at no point did you ever felt that Anakin Skywalker or Hayden Christensen achieved a level of emotion that Adam Driver has in that scene. Because you could tell, like, he had a real conflict in his face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, his eyes were teary. He was conflicted the way he was talking. Yeah. The way the dialogue was written. I mean, it's got to be Larry Kasdan, because the way the dialogue was written in this movie is
yeah, but Driver delivers that dialogue in a way which is real and emotional and powerful. You know what I mean?
I do.
And you already get a sense that Kylo Ren is so much more complex than Anakin was in the prequels at any given point.
And you can see what's coming there. Did you? I knew it was coming, which is the big spoiler that Han Solo gets killed off.
Right.
You know, we talked about this before, the fact that we're probably going to lose some of those main original characters just because that's the nature of the thing. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing to me about this whole loss of Han Solo, especially from Kylo Ren, each of these movies, each start of each prequel has a similar scenario. So in A New Hope, you have Vader killing Ben Kenobi, right, who is Luke's mentor at that point. Episode 1, you have Qui-Gon being killed by Darth Maul. Same kind of deal. And then in this one, you have Kylo Ren killing off Han Solo, who at this point in the story is kind of the mentor to Rey.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that you kind of have those similar notes at the start of each prequel. Yeah. And there's little things like that throughout. There's always that one weird, quirky character, like you have Yoda. We have Maz Kanata here, who is kind of the Yoda figure. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of little throwbacks like that.
Yeah.
And while they at sometimes feel a little disingenuous, it never does take you out of that story, like I said.
No.
And I think that is of great benefit for this movie. And that's what makes it so great, is that even with its shortcomings, it feels like a great movie. And it's an experience.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it in 3D? Because I didn't.
No, I won't see this stuff in 3D.
I don't either.
I always find the 3D is just distracting, and you can't enjoy it as much, I find. That's my personal thing. I just want to see it in a very straightforward way.
Yep, me too. I want to see it the way I've seen all of the movies thus far. Although, you know, on a second viewing, I might consider seeing it in IMAX. I don't know.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to see it in IMAX now. So I have no interest in 3D, but I will like to see it in IMAX.
I think it's in IMAX. It is in 3D, though.
Really? Oh,
I think I might be wrong. But I would love to see it in a non-3D IMAX scenario, if that's possible. All right, I'm going again on Sunday. I'm taking my oldest daughter, because she loves Star Wars and she's super excited, especially about Rey.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was kind of the fulfillment of the thing that you've wanted this whole time, Tony.
Yes.
You know, this was the fulfillment of the sort of girl power Star Wars.
This is the year of that. I'm telling you, between that and Mad Max, which is not about Mad Max at all. We've talked about that movie should be called Furiosa.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to let my daughter watch that movie. So she's only 7. But I'm so excited to take her to this movie, because Rey is the most powerful, the strongest, physically and emotionally character in this film, hands down. And they don't play any of the BS tropes. They play against the tropes, if they do anything, kind of poking fun. You know, Finn keeps trying to help her, but she needs no help. and they make that abundantly clear at the start of the movie, and it carries through the entire movie, and I love it. And especially having two young daughters, you know, I've talked about this so many times, and I am so happy that it's finally here. There's a Star Wars movie I can take my daughter to, and she is going to be so excited that she has this amazing character, and Daisy Ridley knocks it out of the park. This is literally one of the best performances by an actress I've seen all year, and I'm not just saying that because I'm such a Star Wars geek. It really, I mean, through dialogue, through emotion, through her interactions with Finn, it was just such an emotional, strong character, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
You know, I want to talk a little bit. Yeah, you know, it's this film probably has the best acting in all of the Star Wars films.
It does the most consistent.
Just acting.
You know, it absolutely does.
Before everybody freaks out, I'm not talking about the movie as a whole. You know, I'm talking about just the flat out acting, because John Boyega's acting and Daisy Ridley's acting and Adam Driver's acting is so good. You know what I mean? The new people that they brought in are so good.
Well, there's a part where Finn meets Poe Dameron. When they first meet, you then, like, they have this instant connection that would not work if the actors were not good. Right. You know, if Hayden Christensen, just to use him as, we're going to use him as the example of bad throughout.
Well, he's definitely the gold-plated example. He is.
So he, you know, he wouldn't be able to establish that connection, so you wouldn't feel the connection later in the movie, but there's a point where they meet back up, and they just, they're so excited to see each other, they hug each other. I got a little teary-eyed at that moment.
Yeah,
and that is a virtue of that acting. I mean,
and it's funny because I mean, when you reflect, they didn't really spend a lot of time with each other.
Not at all
at the beginning, but it was just enough. But like you said, they made a connection in that period of time. You know,
it's a lot like Luke and Han did.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of, you know, it was trial by fire.
But this felt even more genuine than that initial Luke and Han relationship.
Right. I mean, because, you know, he obviously. You know, Finn sees the slaughter of the small town, and obviously with Poe. And I'm overcomplicating myself. What I want to say is this: is that all of these characters are super complex. You know, and I think that's one of the main things that works for them. There's nothing standard about any of them. They're very complex. You know, Finn is a stormtrooper who, you know, realizes he can't carry out his job. He can't be a stormtrooper. He can't be that cold, you know. And, you know, he's dealing with his own stuff. Rey's dealing with her own stuff and her background and obviously her flashbacks. Kylo, and you know what I like too is that they didn't explain too much.
No, they didn't. I mean, it's still a mystery who Rey's parents are. And maybe it's inconsequential, but it's hanging out there, and I don't think it's inconsequential.
Yeah. And it's a mystery why Kylo Ren has done what he's done. We don't know why he left his parents. You know, we believe it's something to do with Luke was training him and he was seduced to the dark side. But then that's a whole other story. You know, how did he get seduced to the side? How did he get taken away from Luke? There's a whole something going on there.
Well, we don't know anything about Snoke.
Right.
Except for the fact that he is played by Andy Serkis, we now know is that character was a little too Gollum-like for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't love that character, but we don't know anything about him yet.
Right.
I'm interested where that plays out.
You brought up Mad Max earlier, and I think that's a good jumping-off point, because I think this film, much like Mad Max, does not do the modern film thing where they stop the whole movie to explain everybody's motivation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, this is so-and-so. He was born here. He did this. He did that. And they did that. You know, it does not stop cold.
You learn it through interactions.
Right. That's it. You know, I teach screenwriting. And one of the toughest things you teach when you teach screenwriting is you have to tell people that in a movie you have to show and not tell. You know what I mean? You have to show what's going on and not tell it. Whereas in the prequels, they're constantly telling you, you know. I mean, look at how many times Anakin and Padme said, we're so in love because we're so in love and we're so in love. You know, you and I have been married. We've been married a while. I don't think we constantly kept telling our wives, well, honey, it's because we're so in love.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing here is that when going back to that scene between Han and Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Well, when Han comes out onto the platform to confront him, he calls him by his real name, which is Ben, which we then learn. And just that bit of that one notion of dialogue, him saying Ben, gives you so much background,
right?
In just knowing what his real name is.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they handle a lot of the character interactions. And right. You're right. You get a lot of background through through action and small bits of dialogue that flow naturally.
You know, the audience wants to fill in the blanks. That's where the audience gets its payoff. And if you fill in all the blanks for the audience, then they don't feel like they've earned their meal. You know what I mean? They don't feel like they've earned their ride. And that's what this film, like I said, with Mad Max Fury Road as well, where they just keep the movies, the story going. You know, they're not stopping for anything. And you get just enough information to get you to the next thing. And that's why, you know, that movie, you know, last night, I mean, it just moves. It moves. You know,
it does. It does not feel like a movie that's over 2 hours
at all. At all. You know,
it's definitely how was your theater going experience?
I was fine.
Was it enthusiastic or were people generally reserved?
Oh, no. They were enthusiastic.
Lots of clapping and gasps. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you go opening night.
You throw Han Solo off a bridge, somebody's going to gasp.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? And there's no question to whether he's alive or dead. He is dead.
Oh, he's dead.
Because he fell far. He got stabbed right through the chest. He's not a Jedi. And that planet blew up. I mean, that planet is gone.
And you know, I think they were part of it was Harrison Ford's wish to get out.
I'm sure it was.
You know, he's even though he's definitely having a good time doing what he's doing, but you know, he's stated several times he wants to get out from under it.
But as a crux for Kylo Ren's character, it's huge. I mean, it's a huge action. You know, I went with my wife and she was pissed that they killed off Han Solo. But you have to think about it, what is that going to do with Kylo Ren? It gives him, it either sends him deeper to the dark side or makes him more conflicted. Things are playing out, I think is what's going to happen.
No, actually, my thing with that is I think he felt that he had to do it to make that leap. I think he needed to exercise any possible goodness in himself. And I think he realized by killing his father that would finally, you know, put any question in his mind that he is dark away, not dark, away.
You know? I don't know. Judging from Finn and his breaking away from the stormtroopers, I feel like, I don't know, I'm thinking Kylo Ren has, his conscience is going to come into play more and more. I just think that's going to be the difference between these newer movies.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the Disney-fied version. Maybe Jiminy Cricket is one of the overseers. But I just feel like the conscience of Kylo Ren is going... I just feel like they're going to keep that character so complex. Yeah. And it's not as simple as him jumping to the dark side. I feel like they're going to take it deeper than that. Mm-hmm. And I could be completely wrong, but...
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like from what I've seen or for what I saw last night with these characters and this acting and the way the screenplay was written with the interactions and everything, character plays a lot more of an important role in this than it does obviously in the prequels. Right. And, you know, it's a little stronger than it even was in the original films. And I'm not saying this is better because it's not. I still think this is the fourth best Star Wars film.
I don't know about that. I think it's definitely better than Return of the Jedi. I really do.
Really?
Well, the acting wise, I mean, I just think
acting wise, you know, yes. If you're judging by acting, but
I mean, and just overall, just tone and just level of entertainment, I think it's pretty strong. You know,
for me, it's the the thing that takes me out of it a little bit is all of the nods to the other movies. Right. And that's something J.J. Abrams tends to do. If you watch Super 8, that movie is an obvious 100% homage to the Amblin films that Spielberg did.
Right.
And here he is working with Kathleen Kennedy, and he's a Star Wars fan. Right. So he's going to throw nods in. Sometimes they just feel... They feel forced in a way that doesn't take you completely out of things.
Yeah. But
you still feel a little... you feel a little manipulation, a little man behind the curtain there.
Well, but the thing is, too, is I look at that as, for 15 years, people have been grousing that they were cheated out of a Star Wars experience. That the prequels were, you know, that the prequels tried too hard to not give that fan service. And if you're Disney and you're hearing that constant drone, that drumbeat, of we want these characters back, we want these characters back, we want these characters back, you know, you have to, I mean, you can't not go with it. Because as much as people, look at it this way, I firmly believe that as much as people are complaining about all the throwbacks, okay, if those throwbacks weren't in there, people would be going, this sucks, it doesn't have any of the original people, I thought this was going to be like the original thing, they lied to us, this is garbage, yada, yada, yada. So, I this is what I look at. I think the next one is actually going to be better.
It probably will.
Because the next one, and the good thing for Rian or Ryan Johnson, is that now that J.J. Abrams did all the hatchet work. He put all the people in. He got all that out of the way. And when Ryan Johnson comes in now, he can just do his job. And that's it. You know, he doesn't have the weight of all that other garbage on him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that the character, you know, the classic characters being a part of it is huge, and
yeah.
I'm not counting that as an homage because they're playing the same characters. They're not an homage. The homage stuff is like the entire Death Star sequence doing that over again.
Yeah, that was hokey.
That one, hokey. I mean, it was almost for shot. You know,
and the thing is, like, they can't come up with another type of terror or problem or you know what I mean, you know, final solution than this.
And there's a lot unanswered too, which will be interesting to see how it plays out about the First Order. And you know, I haven't been reading, but I want to get into some of the comics, the Shattered Empire stuff that's between Return of the Jedi and this, that kind of shows what's happened to the different factions and everything. Because I don't think they're going to go too deep into that in the movies. But, you know, the First Order, we don't know too much about them. We know nothing about Snoke or anything like that. So I'm interested to see how all of that's going to play out. And I'm hoping they don't I'm hoping the next film doesn't open with a big snow planet siege or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want my criticisms to be heard as against this movie because I loved it. This is one of the best movies I've seen all year. I've been thinking a lot today about, do I like this more than Mad Max Fury Road? And the answer is no. Fury Road is the better movie.
But let me just say one thing, though.
Yeah.
People have to remember that this is the foundational film for a new Disney franchise. So the thing you really should be comparing it to is Iron Man. Because that's basically what it's supposed to be. It is the first in a foundation of a series. Now, that being said, what does that mean? What that means is we're going to probably be seeing the best of this either two or three movies down the road, where either the third or fourth installation of this or... I really think that this film is 100% foundational. I think when we look back, it won't be the best that comes out of this group. And there'll be something down the road that is so awesome that it's going to blow this out of the water.
You know, I think it's foundational too, but I also think it's retrospective
because
it's the connective tissue between Disney owning this new start for Star Wars and the original franchise. So, you know, I mean, it's the same franchise, but you know what I mean, the original films.
Right.
So I think, you know, there is a retrospective element, and I think maybe that has something to do with J.J. Abrams being a part of this, because he is good at that, and he does well with it. Yeah. And I think it's necessary, especially as this movie is going up and up and up, and it's probably going to shatter the record that Avatar currently holds.
Yeah.
It's already, I believe, in the process today of shattering the opening record that Jurassic World took last year.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's very interesting to me, is how this movie is going to...
Well, I'll say one thing, deservedly so, because this movie's a million times better than Avatar.
Yeah,
and it is. Better, it's certainly better than Jurassic World, too.
Oh, God. So, but imagine that. Jurassic World came out this year, and Force Awakens. Yeah. Two movies that shattered the record for...
Yeah.
Or, you know, probably will shatter the record for box office. That's huge. That's a big year in film.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, but ironically, though, when you look at everything else, you say, you know, what else? We'll get off topic here a little bit, but what else, you know, did tremendously well this year? I mean, when you think that they still consider Ultron a disappointment, you know?
Yep.
At $1.5 billion. And, well, you know, people say that, you know, for them to be satisfied, this thing's got to make $2 billion, which it will. I have no doubt in that, because I think this won't just do great here. I think this will absolutely kill overseas.
It definitely
will. Especially in Asia, where most of that money gets made, in China. You know, we'll see.
No, this movie's going to do tremendous. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the First Order and its similarities with North Korea are quite hilarious, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. They're not very subtle, the comparisons there. And I kind of like that. But I think, I don't know. I hate to criticize the movie, because I really loved it, and I don't want people to think I didn't. So when I say things about, you know, the Death Star rehashing and stuff like that, it's not so much a criticism as it is just a little thing that bugs me.
Right.
But I'm telling you, the actors, the Finn, Rey, Poe, Kylo, and BB-8 was amazing.
Yeah.
BB-8 played great for comic relief. They don't do any of the hokey BS that they did in the prequels with Jar Jar.
No.
The childlike, innocent comic relief comes strictly from BB-8 in this, and it's never played campy, and it works perfectly.
You know what I found fascinating about BB-8 is that by allowing the head to articulate, you're able to get so much more emotion out of the robot.
You can.
By just letting it bob its head or move it back and forth, something like that. It's interesting how that you felt emotion coming out of that droid.
But I would argue that you felt R2-D2 was always emotional because of his the tones of his beeps.
Right.
I mean, to me, R2-D2, I could always tell what his emotions were. If he was sad, it was quite apparent.
Yeah.
So I think this is just a kind of a different take on it.
Yeah.
And BB-8, though, every time he's on screen... Mm-hmm. Plays for laughs, which reminded me a little bit of what's the robot's name from Rebels?
Chopper.
Chopper. I keep wanting to call him Ratchet.
Chopper. No, Chopper.
Yes, it reminded me a little of Chopper, who is, you know, kids love Chopper. The kids watching Rebels love Chopper more than any other character on that show. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see my daughter's reaction to BB-8. I know she's gonna love him.
I want to bring up something I want to talk about when I was thinking of it last night. Things that underwhelmed.
And Captain Phasma?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is...
Yeah, Tony, we have been working together too long.
Well, this is really funny, because there's been this rumor, and who knows if it's true or not, that Captain Phasma was not originally Gwendolyn Christie.
Right.
And that the actor under the hood is not actually Gwendolyn Christie. It's a guy, and they change it later on. That could be completely false, and it probably is. But hearing that, you know, now after seeing the movie, who cares? Because the character hits zero notes. And
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
People were comparing it to Captain Phasma to Boba Fett.
No.
Because it looked awesome. And the character does look great. Yeah. But there's no points of action. The character's kind of weak.
Yeah.
That was a disappointment.
Very much so, yeah.
It's weird. It's weird how the hype of a character beforehand, all these other characters were hyped beforehand in a big way, too.
Right.
And they worked out pretty damn well.
Yeah.
This one, no. Just didn't.
Well, that, and even like Maz Kanata, I was kind of like, eh.
Maz Kanata, to me,
it's like, I don't know.
So the whole Maz Kanata scene, I didn't love that scene. You know, it was obvious their version of the cantina scene.
Right.
Maz Kanata is basically playing the new Yoda-like character. So those two things together happening at the same time, I just wasn't totally into that.
Yeah.
And the CGI was good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a huge fan of overly done CGI, and this movie had three instances of it for me. Mm-hmm. Maz Kanata was one. She looked good. It was well done.
Yeah.
But
it's CGI.
It's CGI. The creatures on Han Solo's ship at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of ridiculous.
Yep.
That scene was great. Everyone, all the acting and everything was amazing. It was funny. Mm-hmm. So, again, I wasn't taken out of the scene by this. I'm just noting it. But the CGI was just crap there. And then Snoke just looks like one of the orcs from the Hobbit movies to me.
Right.
And
someone needs to explain to me why Maz Kanata and Snoke could not have been practical.
I don't know.
They don't look very difficult.
They did a ton of other practical effects.
Yeah. I don't understand why those just can't be.
I wonder if they tried and it just wasn't coming across well. Who knows? I mean, those are the nitpicky questions that only diehard Star Wars nerds think about. But, you know, they're valid questions.
Yeah. But like I said, the one person that stuck out is, I found it was so funny, you jumped right on it, was Phasma, though, that I was like, huh.
It's because like the character had tons of hype.
She started out pretty strong, you know, giving him a hard time, been a hard time. And then you don't see her until, you know, they catch up to her.
And they catch her, like, immediately. Oh, it's like no nothing. Thing.
Like nothing.
Yeah.
Like, she's the most menial stormtrooper on the planet.
Hopefully they take that and make her a stronger, more interesting character in the next film.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, my other disappointment, too, was Max von Sydow.
Yeah.
Because he's a great actor.
Yes, but don't discount that, because the fact that he shows up at the beginning, we have no idea who his character is.
Right.
We don't know who he is. And the fact that he shows up with this chip and then disappears, you know he's going to show up in the other films in probably a more important way, and he's probably going to be somebody that's going to be quite interesting to us. Mm-hmm. That's my guess.
I hope so.
Because I thought that, too. I was like, man, they really wasted Max von Sydow. Yeah. But then I thought about it. I was like, yeah, but he's definitely coming back in a bigger way.
Right.
That character was just kind of a hint. Like you say, it's a foundation for something. And if he doesn't show up again, then it's just a WTF moment. Right. Because why would you take an actor like that and just have him, unless he's a giant Star Wars fan and he just wanted to be in it.
I mean, it's not as bad as, you know, Darth Maul, but...
No.
I think Darth Maul was probably the all-time gold-plated champion of disappointment as far as expectation, and then they kill him off right away.
Well, to this day, that lightsaber battle is the one that people talk about most of any of the seven movies thus far.
Well, I mean, when I watched it, when you see Hugh McGregor in that lightsaber battle, especially when he's waiting for that door to open and Darth Maul's pacing back and forth and looking at him, you sense a genuine anger in Ewan McGregor. He's like bouncing on his heels.
Yeah, well, a big part of that is Duel of the Fates, too.
Yeah.
Behind it. We didn't have there was no great track like that in this movie. Yeah.
No, there wasn't. But still, like I said, the look on his face, the intensity, like there was some real some juice in that fight. You know what I mean?
There was.
It was some energy to it.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, the lightsaber battle in this one between Rey and Kylo Ren, I mean, that one was full of emotion, and it was totally unexpected.
Yeah.
Because she overpowers him.
Right.
And the fact that she learned the Force powers self-taught fast.
Look, she got Daniel Craig to take her restraints off.
Yes, I know. I saw that. That's amazing. It makes me wonder how many other actors were
under
some of the masks.
Simon Pegg.
Yep. He was the little creature at the beginning in the Jakku.
Yep. That stole BB-8.
Yep.
You know, so you got Simon Pegg and Daniel Craig, and we'll see who else falls out of the tree.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, if I was an actor and I had a chance just to be a stormtrooper, I mean, I would pay for the chance. I'd be like, you don't have to pay me.
Totally do it, yeah.
You just give me, like, the low end of the SAG extra pay, or, you know, who wouldn't do that?
Yeah.
So that's why it would be funny if Max von Sydow was just a big Star Wars nerd, and he's just like, give me a part. I don't think that's the case.
No.
So what did you think about the space battles and ships and all of that stuff? Because we're introduced to a lot of new worlds and creatures and some new ships and stuff like that. Again, some of them, I read some review that said Jakku is basically Tatooine.
Right.
I mean, sure, I guess, but... What did you think about the settings and everything?
Well, I have to say one thing. The CGI on the space battles between the TIE fighters and the X-Wings I thought was fabulous. I thought they did some new angles.
The opening angle.
Yeah.
Remember how it opened? You know, after the title crawl?
Yeah, the shadows. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, as much as people say, oh, they did this, they did that, but there's a lot of things they did different, very subtly, that were really good. One thing I thought, like I said, the dynamics of how the ships fly is much better. Another thing that I thought was lighting in this movie. You know, Star Wars films are lit pretty flat for the most part, and they did try a lot of interesting things with lighting in this. I thought the scene where they talk to Snoke being as dark as it is looked great. I especially thought the scene on the bridge was tremendous, with the light coming in through the door, and how when the light went out, that's when Kylo made his change.
Yes. Yeah.
How that was synced up, and I thought that was brilliant.
With the sun, that was awesome. Yeah. That was really good.
And it's just a beautiful shot of that long bridge and that one column of light hitting him.
Yeah, it was subtle. It was very subtle.
Subtle, but I mean, shit, was that good?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That was really good, I agree.
And that's filmmaking and cinematography. And like I said, and I know we keep beating on the prequels, but I'll tell you one thing. I had a lot of people come up to me this week defending the prequels. That's probably why I'm a little angry about it. Because I spent the whole week telling people, like, are you nuts?
Well, these were filmed in practical locations. So
right. But even stuff that was CGI'd, you know what I mean? It's done in a way where things had depth and texture.
And camera movement. Which, I mean, the prequels have some camera movement, but the camera movement itself is digitized.
Well, if you look at it in the prequels, people are either walking and talking or sitting on a couch.
Yeah, yep.
You know, and that's because of a limited space.
No, here the camera is moving constantly.
Yeah. People are flying around.
That's why the movie feels a lot faster than it is, because there is constant motion going on. And it's smooth motion. There's never any sharp, jagged cutaway shots during fight scenes. During that lightsaber scene, there's not 5,000 cuts between each lightsaber jab. No. They're long cuts, long takes. And you don't get that in these kinds of movies at all anymore. Everything's so cut up and transformerized that you can't tell what's happening in action scenes.
And just the idea of shooting a lightsaber battle in the woods, in the snow,
it's pretty great.
It looks beautiful. I mean, it looks beautiful. See, and that's just
very Kurosawa.
Yeah, and that's just thinking. That's just taking, you know, that's filmmaking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's stopping for a minute and saying, how do we take this thing and make it look good? And yeah, it looks tremendously more Kurosawa, which is Kurosawa obviously being the inspiration for the original trilogy.
Yep, in a big way.
In a big way.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's so much, like I said, subtle things. It's just the film works because it's just flat-out good filmmaking, you know? Whether it borrows from New Hope, whatever, but at the end of the day, if you take a kid to see this who's never watched A New Hope and who isn't tainted with thinking that, you know, these correlations, they're going to enjoy the hell out of it because, you know, it's just good, well done.
The stealing from New Hope stuff,
yeah,
that's story stuff. Yeah. And at the end of the day, this still has a good story.
Right.
Sure, it's not maybe a great story because, like you say, it's foundational, so it's not the whole story. Right. But you don't want to be too harsh on it because for this type of movie, for what Star Wars is and what Star Wars always has been, it fits. You know, you don't go to a Star Wars film expecting to see, you know, some great drama story play out in front of you. You don't want that. That's not where you're going.
You don't go to see taxation and parliamentary tactics.
No, you don't. Exactly. You don't.
So somebody this week online, they were like, you know, you don't like the first ones. You got to understand that they're written for children. And I said, really? Children's movies are about taxation and parliamentary tactics?
Yeah.
I know my son is really, I can't get my son off C-SPAN. I mean, he's always on C-SPAN.
Yeah, he's always talking about interest rates going up.
Oh, he's like, you know, someone's passing a bill and so-and-so won't let him do it. And yada, yada, yada.
No, that's another thing. The story here, it's not perfect.
Right.
It's not an Oscar-winning screenplay. It's not a Charlie Kaufman script.
Nope.
But it's what it should be. Yeah. And in that regard, it hits the right notes. Yes, it makes a couple of decisions that I frown upon, but at the end of the day, story works. And the way the dialogue was written in this, I'm wondering if any of it was ad-libbed or not.
Right.
I'm thinking probably not too much, but man, between that dialogue and the characters and the acting, that for me was the sticking point for this movie. I mean, John Boyega was hilarious.
Oh, totally.
He was the funniest part of the entire movie. He hit the right notes over and over and over again.
Yeah, my favorite line was when Han Solo asks him what the plan is on Starkiller Base, and he goes, "Well, I thought you guys would do some of that Force stuff."
Yeah,
and Han goes, "That's not how it works."
Yeah, it's great. The humor in this felt stronger than any of the other Star Wars movies.
The other best scene is when Kylo Ren is tearing up the interrogation room and the stormtroopers walk up.
And then they turn around and leave. Away. Amazing.
You know, that felt like Stormtrooper Gary from the Robot Chicken. Yeah. That was definitely a Stormtrooper Gary moment.
So, what did you think about Luke Skywalker being the MacGuffin here?
It was kind of fascinating. You know, like I said, they leave a lot out of the story. And one of the things they leave out is why everybody was so desperate to find Luke Skywalker. And they didn't really say why. Like, I understand, you know, Kylo Ren probably wants to hunt him down and kill him.
Yeah. Or recruit him back to the...
Right.
Try to recruit him back to the dark side.
Yeah. But we don't know why... not the rebels, but the resistance.
The resistance
wants him back so badly. I don't know why they want him back so badly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's never really fully explained. And again, another thing that's not explained well is, and we'll learn, I'm sure, is what happened with Kylo Ren and Luke. You know how that all went down.
Right.
So you know that could even have something to do with it, since Leia is kind of running the show.
Yeah.
You know, her trying to find out what happened, and it's interesting.
That's why I really feel the best is yet to come with these movies.
Yeah. We just caught a little glimpse of Luke at the end,
right,
looking very Ben Kenobi.
And you know, I love that scene in that. I love Daisy Ridley's acting in it because she goes up to him and she holds out the lightsaber, and he looks at her, and then she cuts back to her. And she's got a look on this face like, you better take this damn thing.
Yeah, she does. She does. Yeah. Because, you know, what's a lot different from, you know, she's basically the Luke of this new trilogy.
Absolutely.
But what is a lot different from her character and Luke's, Luke was dying to get off of Tatooine. Right. She was dying to get back to Jakku.
Right.
You know, Luke didn't give, you know, a care about his family or anything like that. She has this family connection that she's, you know, she has more heart in a, and genuine heart in a way than even Luke had. You know, so for her to go to him at the end, because you think she's going to Jakku at the end, but then it turns out that she's not. It's obviously her destiny too, because when Kylo Ren is kind of going through her mind, he says, "I see the ocean, I see the island."
Right.
You know, she had the map in her head.
Yeah.
But she didn't know that he was on an island from that map. So there's definitely some destiny stuff going on there as well.
Totally. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. We have what? Next year we have Rogue One. So then
18 months until the next one.
Till
episode 8.
Because it comes out in May, right?
Right. 18 months.
So at least it's not coming out in December.
Right, which makes more sense.
I mean, the next one comes out in December, right? Rogue One.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
And then 6 months after Rogue One, you're getting Episode 8.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then after that, we'll have, I'm guessing, the young Han Solo movie. Or I don't know if it'll be a young Han Solo movie, but it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, especially now since they've killed him off.
Yeah. I mean, how old was Han Solo's character in the first movies? In his 20s?
No, he's 30s. He has to be in his 30s, yeah.
So, I mean, who are they going to... It would have to be a young Han Solo for it to work. You can't have a new actor come on to play Han Solo at the same age Han Solo was in the first movies.
Right.
It would just piss people off.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It'll be... I'm really interested to see what happens and also see if they kind of beef up production on these movies where we get more than one a year. I hope they don't.
Oh, I was gonna say, I hope not. That's bad. I don't want that.
It's because it's happening with the superhero thing right now. I'm getting that oversaturation point.
Yeah.
I look at the previews for the X-Men Age of Apocalypse stuff, and I'm not excited for that. I'm sick of seeing cities blown up, and I don't want to get to that point with Star Wars. I really don't.
I agree 100%.
So I'm hoping Disney kind of, you know, reels it back a little bit.
Yeah, that is a legitimate fear. I mean, you know,
especially as this goes into making a ton of money, they're gonna look at that and say, oh well, maybe we should be doing more of these.
Well, that's gonna be the tough thing, and the tempting thing for them is you know, to kill it, you know what I mean, to overdo it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm happy with just a new trilogy.
I am, you too. Know,
the ancillary stuff is fine.
I would like to see a television show, a live-action television show, that isn't based on any characters that we know of.
Exactly, yeah.
Just in the Star Wars universe, and maybe mentions of characters we know of.
Yeah.
I think that would play out tremendously. I've always wanted that. But as far as the spin-offs, Rogue One sounds great, because it's not about characters that we know. But when you start getting into the Boba Fett's and the Han Solo's, they sound really cool. They sound really fun, but that's where water gets a little murky. It makes me a little nervous.
No, I agree 100%.
So I'm dying to see where Disney kind of plays things out. And I'm really hoping, though, they stick to that one movie a year thing.
Like I said, though, you know, they haven't given us any reason to worry so far. So
no, they nailed this one.
And you got to hand it to Disney, man. They are orchestrating all these different things and really not throwing any, you know, missing much. You know, when you think of the amount of movies that they're cranking out and the quality of the movies one after another, you know, and they, when you think about it, in the last 10 years, I mean, they really haven't made something I would consider a dog. Well, people would say probably Iron Man 2. They're not big fans of
Disney, or their Marvel properties.
The Marvel properties, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, because Disney's made some stuff that's
right, but that's not their AAA stuff. That's not their, you know.
No,
that's not their fastball.
No, it's not. I mean, this is their new fastball, because even the Marvel stuff is beginning to fizzle a little bit.
Yeah.
This just has much more money-making potential, and merchandising potential. Oof.
Yeah, I mean, they timed this out pretty well, you know.
Oh, Christmas is going to be all Star Wars. I don't know about you, but I bought some Star Wars stuff for my kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what Star Wars is. But, again, I would have liked to have seen this in May instead of December, just because right. that fits the MO of all the Star Wars releases.
Yep. No, I agree.
But it fits. It's a nice early Christmas present, and yep. I'm super happy with it. Super, yep. super happy with
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you know, 2016 from a movie standpoint is going to hum along so fast. You know, when you think we have Deadpool coming very shortly, and then Batman versus Superman Ugh. Very shortly after that, Ugh. And then Civil War very shortly after that. I mean, it's basically about a month and a half in between major releases next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more excited next year for movies like Spielberg's BFG. Right. I'm more excited for these movies that are kind of off that track.
Right.
Because I'm starting to get a little tired. I'm excited for Civil War. That looks really yeah. great, and I think those Captain films are the best of the superhero movies, in my opinion.
Right.
But the other stuff, I don't know. I'm just yeah. getting a little sleepy with it. So this is wonderfully refreshing to see, you know, a Star Wars film. Guardians of the Galaxy felt great like this to me too. When I left that, yeah. that I was super exuberant. Mm-hmm. Did you stay after the credits for this?
No,
I didn't either. I mean, there is nothing after the credits, but
no. yeah,
I did that. I was not about to stay after the credits.
No, no, my theater didn't even have previews. I mean, it literally just started right into the movie. Yeah.
Oh, we had way too many previews.
Yeah.
Way too many previews, mm-hmm. like Warcraft and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you're gonna see it again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've talked to people who aren't, I mean, we're diehard Star Wars fans. We have a Star Wars podcast. But I've talked to people even people today who I knew maybe liked the Star Wars films, but didn't really care much about them. And they're going to see it. They saw it last night. They're going to see it for their second time. My mom is going to see it Tuesday. Yeah. It's, I mean, that's a huge, mm-hmm. diverse audience that no other movie is going to get. And the fact that they're going to see it multiple times,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. I mean, I'm going Sunday. Who knows? I may see it three times. And we talked about this last week about how you left episode one and other people left episode one being positive but confused. Yeah. And it took a long time to understand that it was not a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this scenario,
I don't have fear of that.
I don't have fear of that this time too. But you know, then again, we could have been having this conversation after episode one and saying the same thing. But honestly,
No, because you know, I remember episode one. Even though I walked out initially positive, and I think it had everything to do with that lightsaber battle. But when Jar Jar came out, even the first time, I was like, "What the hell is this about?" Because it was so out of left field. Like, there was nothing in this movie that felt completely out of left field. Like, what is that about?
No, there wasn't. I mean, the only thing was the Death Star, the whole Death Star scene, but it didn't seem goofy.
No.
It just seemed tired in a way. And tired plays better than goofy.
I mean, you had Jar Jar, and then you had Boss Nass, which was another one that was really bad.
Well, all of those characters. I mean, the droid army.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. It just looked weird.
Well, yeah. Well, that was the other thing. Like, right away, like, you walked out, you knew there was something not quite right. Like, the droid. Why do the droids look so damn wimpy?
Well, it's because what Lucas tried to do with the prequels mm-hmm. is create this amazing scale. But by doing it artificially, it just doesn't work sometimes. I mean, it worked in the Lord of the Rings films. But it did not work in the Star Wars prequels. And here, this new movie is so scaled back.
Yeah.
You know, you never have a ton of characters on the screen at one time, except for that one scene with the army, that kind of Leni Riefenstahl scene. Yeah. That's it. Amazing.
I kind of thought that his speech was probably the only goofy thing in the movie. because it was just so like overdone. The not Snoke, but
what's Domhnall Gleeson's character?
Yeah, yeah. Like his speech, like it was a little almost too intense. It was almost comically over the top.
Yeah. Yep.
That was the one thing, but it wasn't like, you know, Boston Oz with the Issa Mawusa and all that other crap.
No, at least you can understand. And even Adam Driver's the mask that he wears, which is it's amazing that he wears that mask just for effect, just as an homage to his grandfather. Yeah. But like his voice modulator and everything, it's clear. There's no weird talking or anything like that, and I really appreciated that. You can hear Adam Driver's voice come through that modulator. Yeah. You can tell it's his voice. I like that.
There was no insulting accents.
Oh no, not at all. And they kept like Daisy Ridley, you know, she kept her accent. I like that. Why not? Yeah. You know? Yeah. Everything about the acting in this for me was spot on, perfect. Absolutely. And Abrams, I mean, he did a great job directing this cast. But for me, the casting is the best thing about this movie, because they've created these characters that are instant classics. They really, really, truly are instant classics. Right. And I mean, they're superstars now. John Boyega, Daisy Ridley, they're going to superstar. Oscar Isaac, he's already had a pretty good career. Have you seen Ex Machina?
No, I haven't seen it yet. No.
Well, his character in Ex Machina is not a huggable, lovable pilot character like you have here. He's quite dark. So I literally watched Ex Machina the night before I saw Force Awakens. And Domhnall Gleeson's in it too. So that was a little strange. I kept kind of having flashbacks to both of his characters. But, I mean, man, what a great cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. They knocked it out of the park. You know, the acting knocks it out of the park. It's one of those movies, if they had done this thing on a stage, it still would work just because of the way those guys act.
Yeah. You know? So to end things here on our review episode, what would you consider this your favorite movie of the year?
You know, I would probably put it a hair ahead of Mad Max, only is that as much as I loved Mad Max, I'll probably watch this a couple of more times. Like I feel like the ending of this, I felt compelled to have to go see that next movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And Mad Max just kind of wraps up, and the way things work in Hollywood, we may or may not ever see another Mad Max movie.
No.
But my level of intensity and anticipation, I think at the end of this was stronger, so I'd probably give it that.
Yeah, see, I put Mad Max a hair above this. Yeah. And I mean I love Star Wars more than I love the Mad Max series. So I think at the end of the day I'll probably end up seeing this more than Mad Max Fury Road. But I don't know, I have to give Max the edge.
Just
the
Max is due.
Tiny little edge. Just because they took some moments in the Star Wars film, particularly with like CGI and stuff like that, where the Mad Max movie resisted a little stronger.
It's so frustrating because you want to look at them and go, why? Like you've already eliminated so much of it. Why?
It can't be a cost thing. It's got to be a practicality thing. So
I don't know.
Who knows? But you know, this time next year we'll have the DVD or the Blu-ray. Well, actually, we'll probably have it 6 months from now. So we'll be able to do a whole episode about the special features and see if we learn anything from director's commentary, if there is any, and that'll be a whole interesting thing. And you know, we have lots of episodes coming up, and I'm sure we're gonna learn more things about some of the background from some of the expanded universe stuff. So it'll be interesting. I think we'll be talking about this movie for a long time, and we'll be learning more and more about it. So stay tuned to Dadawan, because this is only the beginning. You know, the Force has only just awoken.
It sure has.
We are going to be back next week for a special, shorter episode talking about the Star Wars Christmas special, just in time for Christmas. So stay tuned, and we will see you next week.
1, 2, 3. This podcast has been a production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.